Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
There's a lot that is constantly going on in the world, and some people choose to see the ugliness. I choose to see the beauty. And we often will forget that even in the midst of darkness, that there's beauty. And go easy on yourself. Learn to love yourself. You were born for a specific purpose. If you're not quite sure what that purpose is yet, take the time to discover it. Serve your purpose to this world because it needs you to do that. Nobody else can do what you can do.
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. If you haven't already listened to my recent conversations with founder of Splashio, Gideon Shelwick, and with Lisa Manette from Badass Beauty TV, then check them out, only after you've listened to today's conversation, of course. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Chad E. Cooper. Chad is a high-performance coach whose clients include world record holders, Olympians, internationally acclaimed artists and musicians, MVPs from every major sport and Fortune 500 CEOs. A published, peer-reviewed author and recognized speaker on optimal human performance, Chad Cooper has been featured in Forbes, in Thrive Global, in CBS Radio, in Huffington Post, to name a few. He also hosts the Legendary Lifestyles radio show, and he's the founder of Legendary Life, the company assisting people to break through to the life that they've always wanted. And he's also the proud father of Factive Nautics Coaching. In our conversation today, Chad talked to me about being a master of your time and also a master of your identity. We talked about why outcome-focused behavior is much more effective than task-focused behavior, and choosing to see what's right, which is always available as choosing what's wrong. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Chad Cooper. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Boca Raton, Florida in the USA, Chad Cooper, who's a leadership and business coach. He's a speaker and author of the book, Time Isn't the Problem, You Are. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Chad. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
I am always delighted to be able to connect with my friends and family down in Australia and around the world. So this is a treat for me. Thanks, Jürgen.
Great. Jamie Greenberg, who was our guest on way back on episode 117 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we have a conversation with you, Chad. So I know Jamie listens in regularly and he gives me some feedback. So big hello to Jamie.
Absolutely. Jamie is a remarkable human being and somebody that I can call a friend and a honor to have in my life. And glad to know that you have that relationship as well.
Yeah. Now, before we start talking about all things leadership and business and time management, to give it a kind of a weird name. Give us a bit of a whistle-stop tour of how you got to where you are today and what some of the pivotal moments were on that journey.
Well, I would say for me, in many ways, I was born in the typical upbringing. My father was an attorney, grew up with a atypical, very large family. So I actually have 5 brothers. Now I have 6 brothers and I have 4 sisters. So 2 separate families. So typical of America where you have the divided family. And I never really saw that as divided or really subscribed to the victimization of, oh, you're the product of divorced parents. I always saw the blessing. And I guess I learned that early on is what's wrong is always available and so is what's right. And so I looked at, hey, I have 4 parents that I can choose. What are their great qualities and discard the rest? And I took that into my experience into the Marine Corps as well. And when I exited the military service, I realized the Marine Corps is a unique branch where we have a motto that is once a Marine, always a Marine. Unfortunately, some of the things about being in the military don't translate or serve you well in the civilian world. And so again, I learned what are the aspects that complement and serve me as a civilian and discount the things that compete or really kind of cause friction and tension. And so I've really tried to adopt that throughout life. When as a employee of Microsoft Corporation, Bill Gates and I retired on the same day. I always say, you know, when Bill found out that I was leaving, he said, I can't do this without Chad. Total farce, right? Not true at all, but it always gets a good laugh. But what I learned is to be resourceful. And to be resourceful means to be able to pick and pluck the assets that are available, even in what we might see as darkness or pain or difficulty, the challenges. And there's always something to be of gratitude. There's always the ability to be kind, even when we're in an environment of unkindness. And so that's just really a principle that I've strived, not always achieved, but strive to show up as in my own behavior. And then that showed up as a major sponsored Ironman triathlete, as a 10-year elected official, as a owner of my own coaching business, and having the honor to work for the number one coaching organization in the world. It was in being the number one coach for that organization around the world. So I will say I am blessed, and I have found that when we look for what is right, there is always an abundance, even when it is difficult to find it at times.
I like the idea of, you know, there's always what's right is always as available to us as what's wrong, and, you know, the abundance mindset.
Yeah, I learned that from the Dalai Lama, as a matter of fact. And the Dalai Lama said, be kind wherever possible. It's always possible.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's just so simple that it allows us to be able to say what he's really saying there is we have a choice, Jürgen. We always have choice. And we can choose to say, well, this person behaved this way or the environment's this way. I'll use that as an excuse to compromise my character, or I can use it as an explanation. And when I look at it as an explanation, I still have a choice on how I want to respond or whether I want to react, whether I want to suppress or whether I want to refrain. Because I find that when we suppress, we're kind of like a tea kettle. And we just build and build and build until we go off on the littlest thing. So when we choose to be kind wherever possible, it allows us to actually say, well, love dissolves anger. Anger doesn't dissolve anger. And I find people get angry when they don't know what else to do or don't know what else to say. So if I can keep those principles, which would be, you know, some of the fruits of the spirit, then it allows me to say, I get to choose intentionally how I want to show up each and every day. You know, I could look at, geez, as you know, up a wee bit early this morning, and I could be grumpy about, I can't believe I had to get up for, or I can look at this and go, wow, what an awesome opportunity. I get to connect with halfway around the world. And what's right about that? It's all in our perspective.
Yeah, I love that. I like the idea of kindness. And I'm not sure this might be the Dalai Lama as well, but it's something that I always remember, is that you can be kind to people. It doesn't cost you anything. And it's actually easier than being nasty. Because as you say, the sort of the being nasty or angry kind of builds up resentment. And it's that kettle that is about to boil over.
Yeah, exactly. And I find that it's similar to the work that we'll be talking about in a little bit about time. And I find that if we actually take the time to write down what we want, if we actually take the time to be kind, it's actually a lot less time than the alternative. But our brain tricks us. Our brain tries to tell us, oh, don't do that, because our brain wants to keep busy. Its job is to never shut down. And it's much like a movie trailer, I would say, is it never plays in sequence. So it plays things in our head in order to entertain us, to keep us churning. But if we actually use our heart and listen with our heart and leverage our head in the right proportion, what we realize is it costs us nothing, and it's a whole lot more efficient to get there and isn't going to drain our batteries in the process. In fact, one may recharge your batteries, the others tend to drain our batteries.
Hmm. All right. Well, you mentioned the book there, and time isn't the problem, you are. So what is the core premise there? I mean, I've always been fascinated by being more productive, and in fact, I'm sort of always looking at how can I be more productive. But I think the key moment for me was when I read Stephen Covey's book, First Things First, and that changed my whole philosophy to time management. And I realized, well, you know, we've all got the same amount of minutes. I think it's 168 minutes a day. And it really is how you choose to use that time and what you choose to do with it, rather than managing that time, because you can't expand it. And also it's available to you, so it's, you don't have less than somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely correct. And it cracks me up whenever I hear Stephen Covey's name, because I'm a big practitioner and love Stephen Covey, but you realize that we are dating ourselves significantly here.
Yes, that's right.
But Stephen Covey's a great example, because Stephen Covey was a pioneer and kind of is the modern understanding of, hey, what do you want to do with your time? You get 168 hours a week, no more, no less. And it really is the true equalizer. It doesn't matter your gender, your ethnicity, your race, your religion, your sexuality. None of it matters. We are all born equal in how much time we get. How we use it is what separates the boys from the men and the girls from the women. And so it occurred to me as I was looking at some people such as Bill Gates or Elon Musk or Sir Richard Branson. And I'm looking at these people going, how is it that they can manage multi-billion dollar industries, yet raise a family, and they have the same amount of time? Yeah, some of them are quite talented, but in reality, they're not really that much smarter than the average person. So they've got to be doing something. And I just researched and researched until what I found was, is they're a master of their time rather than being a slave to it. And most of us are trained and raised to be a slave to time. If we look at where it kind of shifted, is we went from, in the States, we went from an agricultural society where you'd go out during the seasons, and the seasons determined time. Whether, you know, when the sun came up and down, but you went out and you harvested or you planted the crops until they're done, Jürgen. You didn't just start and go, oh, it's time for a lemonade break. It's like, look, yeah, the season's coming, whether you like it or not, and you're either gonna get it planted before the rains come, or you're gonna get it harvested before the winters come. When the industrial age came in, that actually brought in the concept of a 9-to-5 work day. Now, all that really was is a demarcation, a basis of saying, when are you going to get paid regular versus overtime? Nobody's really worked just 40 hours a day. The vast majority of us work more than 40 hours a day, okay? But what that was is just how do we want to get paid in an agreement between employer and employee. But what it also did is that it trained us to really subscribe to activity-based behavior, rather than outcome focused. So when we look at things like a pandemic that happened, and I watched children in school as an example, what I saw in my own son is now that he worked from remote instead of going in classroom, is he chose to get up at the same time. He'd get up at 6 a.m., knock out his homework, and be done by 9 or 10 o'clock. And what he realized is he can be rewarded for outcome behavior. And that's really what we should be teaching our society, teaching our students. And so the best example that I saw was an interview back in, I think, January of 2019 or 2018 with Charlie Rose interviewing Warren Buffett and Bill Gates. And they said exactly what I've been looking for ages. Two of the wealthiest people in the world, they said they're giving all their wealth back. And they said, look, I can't buy a single hour. I can't buy 1 hour more no matter how much money I have. So I better not squander it. How I use that time is precious. And so we can look at if we are really disciplined, if we decide how we want to use that time, that honors Stephen Covey. But Stephen Covey, unfortunately for you and I, is dated as well. Because Stephen Covey wrote in a time where we weren't a global society, really. We weren't a society of internet connectivity. I mean, here we are literally connecting around the world without any lag at all. Well, that was not Stephen's model of the world. No. Today, we have what? We've got how many social media accounts, Jürgen? We've got how many email accounts? How many phone numbers? We are literally a 24/7 global nonstop business. And we have to decide where do we create boundaries. And if we don't, then time in our business is going to own us. And so it becomes a matter of who do I surround myself with? Who are my mentors that can show me how to create those boundaries in a way that facilitates magnificence in each of the areas of my life?
Yeah, there's some really good points in there. And I agree with you. Certainly, when I first discovered Stephen Covey's book was well before the internet. And recently, I've taken to banning myself essentially from Facebook. I've sort of withdrawn completely from Facebook. And every now and then people will say, oh, I sent you a message on Messenger. You didn't see it. You didn't respond. And I say to people, I tell people up front, I say, well, if you want to get a hold of me, these are the ways to do it, because I'm going off Facebook because there's just so much noise on there these days. And also there's lots of negativity around the situation we find ourselves in today. And I thought, well, I don't need to read all that negative stuff. I don't need to spend my time on that kind of thing. So I choose not to.
Can I just say I'm extremely jealous. I wish I had the luxury, unfortunately, for my business. But that, you know, you make a really great point about that is I think many people had they been given the opportunity would probably choose not to. But in business, it's kind of, I don't know, do you guys have had or used to have the yellow pages for the phone?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right? When was the last time you actually looked in the yellow pages? Most of us don't even have it delivered today, right?
Well, we actually got one delivered a couple of weeks back. My wife brought one in. I mean, it was very thin. It was a tiny little thin book. And I just said to her, oh, I didn't realize that was still printed. But I said, and it's not because I used to make a joke when I first started my business, I would do some website building. And I used to talk about websites as your business directory. And I'd make a joke about yellow pages and say, well, the only thing the yellow pages is good for these days is to stick under your monitor to get it at the right height. And I said to my wife there, I said, well, it's not even good for that anymore because it's too thin.
Yeah, there you go. So what that's showing us is an example of here's a tool, and we have to recognize whether that tool is actually allowing us leverage or we're just using it and it's no longer effective. The second is as we choose to use a tool, and all social media is it's a tool, I think primarily for many people for either business or just curiosity. They're trolling. And that allows them to kind of dabble. But instead, what I do with that is I've chosen to look at that as being like a surgeon. Very I'm going in with a precision, and I go in for a very specific purpose. So I actually measure my time. As we're speaking right now, I've got a system that literally is going, oh, you're doing this. And most of us would mark social media as wasted time. I actually mark it as very productive, because the only thing I do is I actually push information out. Rarely am I consuming information, because my belief is if I want to know what's going on with my family, go have a cup of coffee with them, or maybe yeah, something stronger.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that I think that's something that always cracks me up, if people are wishing their partner a happy anniversary or something on Facebook. And I think, well, you know, couldn't you actually go and talk to them?
You know, it is a shift in generations. And I think that what we see, and we talk about in the book, some of the human needs. And Maslow originally created the human needs. And one of them was the need for love and connection. Hmm. Well, the thing with love, we all desperately desire love. And there was a study done ages ago at the Psychiatric Institute in Georgia in the United States. And they had these mentally ill patients going around saying, love me, love me, love me. Why won't somebody just love me? And it wasn't until those patients actually started loving others that they were able to first receive the love that they so desperately desired. And so we have this desperate desire to be loved. But the trick is we have to give love in order to receive it. Very similar to, you have to plant a seed in order to reap a harvest and be able to take it to the market to earn something. And if we look at that in social media, is we're out there consuming, trying to fill up, only to find out that it's not doing it. And so if we look at that as, what can I contribute? And we treat that strategically, then what we find is we need to go past the surface connection. And why do we have just shallow connections today? Because it's safe, Jürgen, right? If I love somebody, I'm at risk of pain. I'm at risk of being hurt. But that's the journey of life. That's kind of one of the rites of passage, is, you know, to love greatly, to love deeply. And when we do that, guess what? One of us is going to die first, most likely. But that's the journey of life. And so I find that we need to have the courage to be vulnerable enough, to be open enough to invest in love rather than connection. So, you know, go have a coffee with your family, go find out what's going on with them, rather than sending a Mother's Day or Father's Day card of I love you over text.
Yeah. Yes. Very good advice. Now, coming back to the time management thing, because I think, you know, there's some, a lot to talk about on about social media, and certainly I like the idea of containerizing these things and saying, well, you know, I'm going to use it as a tool, and here's my focus. I'm going to be laser focused on this like a surgeon. But in terms of taking it back up to how we spend our time and the principles behind that, tell us about some of the principles that you talk about in the book, in terms of deciding what's important for you, where you're going to spend your time.
You bet. So one of the first things that we want to do, Jürgen, is really be a master of our identities. In many ways, and I say this sarcastically, but intentionally as well, is we're all a bit schizophrenic, just in a healthy level. We all wear multiple mask or multiple hats, as you could say. So we have the role of relationships. We have the role of our finances. We have the role of maybe being a parent or a spouse, career, our faith or spirituality. So we have what's called the wheel of life. In the wheel of life, we compartmentalize, or we say, oh, I'm going to wear this hat in this environment or for these purposes. And so we can use the example of health as one primary example. When people go, oh, you know, I want to be healthy. Well, which health are we really talking about first? Are we talking about physical, spiritual, mental, or hopefully all three? And what I find is that many people have limp identities. if we're to look at this in a phallic sense, it's not attractive. But that's how we go around our life. And so we say, oh, I should be working out. Well, who really wants to work out?
Yeah.
Most of us don't. Now, I know you're an avid cyclist, right? But there's something about cycling that has connected you with how you want to feel, with emotions. And what I find is that when we can connect our emotions with specific vehicles, then we experience this discovery of like we're serving our purpose. And so people often will say, oh, you know, what's our purpose? And we've gone down this, somehow gotten down this path that it's, you know, it's the kind of house you live in, the neighborhood you live in, how much money's in the bank, the title on your business card, all of those things. And our purpose isn't material attainment. It isn't a title. Our purpose is a set of feelings. How do we want to feel on a consistent day-to-day basis? And when we know what those qualities are very clearly, then we can apply them into our 168 hours. So instead of using in a subject line workout, which is not inspiring to the vast majority of us, what we can actually do is say, you know, I took a team of coaches across our Grand Canyon and back. Now that's the equivalent of doing two marathons in 2 days and the elevation of Mount Everest. That is a big canyon. Okay. So that's a big crack in the earth, not a small feat. We had the United States Navy SEALs as our support crew in that adventure. Now, if I just wrote workout, there's no way I would have actually done the prep work to be able to even be prepared for that. Why? Because it's not motivating. There's no identity that's connecting me to how I want to feel. So instead it was leading from the front as an example of building my health and serving others. That's literally what an example of what the subject line would say. So when we have an empowering identity, then we want to complement that with language that matters. And I find that we really have not been blessed with colorful language. As a former Marine, I was happy, sad, or pissed. That was the extent of it, right?
Yeah.
And I learned from one of my brothers who is a graphic artist. And he goes, one day he's looking at something, he goes, what do you think? I said, well, that's beautiful blue. He goes, dude, that's not blue. I said, what are you talking about? Stop messing with me. That's blue. Clearly it's blue. He goes, no, man. And he sincerely pulls out this color palette and opens it up and goes, look, this is royal blue. This is baby blue. This is aqua blue. This is periwinkle. I even know, as a former Marine, I know what periwinkle is. Okay. So I'm quite evolved, Jürgen. But what I realized is that our emotions are like a color palette. And the more that we can see the shades of emotion, the richer we can actually bring the quality of our life. We can actually see in 4K or now in 8K, you know, resolution. And as a present evolved man today, I think that it's acceptable and almost required for us to be able to be in touch with our emotions. Whereas it, you know, back when I was growing up, it was John Wayne and emotions were not something that a man, you know, expresses. Mm. Well, I think today we want to embrace that. And when we can apply that into our calendars, then it actually allows that to be in high resolution color versus black and white.
Mm. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, and I like the color analogy. As somebody that's worked in photography and then in decorative paints area, where we had these very thick color charts, color palettes, we could fan out, and there'd be, you know, 100 shades of blue. I don't remember all the names, but you know, we often used their codes, so
yeah.
A little bit different, but there is I recently, and I know Jamie actually shared this with me first, where I came across, but there is an emotional palette which is actually color coded. There's various people have published this as a circle with color codes, and it goes from inside to the outside, and it kind of gives you the language to use for different emotional states and feelings. So often people say, oh, I really hate that. You know, which is kind of, hate is a very powerful emotion, but what they're actually saying is, you know, that just annoys me, which is a lot less powerful emotion. It's kind of, you can dismiss something that annoys you very quickly, whereas if you hate something, that's probably a lot harder to dismiss. So just by expressing something in those different terms, it evokes a different feeling internally, doesn't it?
It really does. And I think you hit the nail on the head there, and that is language matters. And when we can actually type in a very specific, we can be precise in our language, then it actually allows us to be very specific in terms of the outcome that we are trying to achieve. And so it's almost like looking at a dartboard and saying, well, do I see the entire board, or am I actually just going for the bullseye, a very small circle in the center of that? There's an old movie, Mel Gibson, The Patriot or something like that, about the American Civil War. And he's teaching his boys how to shoot. And he teaches and says, boys, remember what I taught you? And they said, yes, father, aim small, miss small. And when we are able to aim for that very precise emotion, guess what? We can arrive and hit that bullseye. And we understand the impact of that, Jürgen, when we're interacting with other people, how we can unintentionally offend somebody because we weren't precise in our language. Well, we aren't as disciplined and we aren't as cognizant as we are running those words in our head. And there's a lot more conversation going on inside our head than actually what comes outside our mouths, right? But when we choose to be deliberate and actually say, I'm going to pay attention to the words that are going on inside of my head, and I'm going to be deliberate about what I actually put in the subject line of my calendar. Because you and I grew up in an age where we had to put appropriate things on our day planners, let alone now on our digital camera or calendars, right? But we put very boring language, and we wonder why we procrastinate. We wonder why we're not feeling fulfilled. We wonder why we have a bit of depression. And the reason for that is that we're missing clarity in our purpose. There's a dear friend of mine I'm looking up here right now that I believe really just nailed when he talked about our purpose and the industrial age. And Mark Devine is a former 25-year Navy SEAL commander. And he talks about the industrial age and the downsides. He says the industrial age brought material prosperity that eliminated a lot of the natural challenges life used to deliver. But it also brought obesity, poor health, a lack of purposeful existence, and a general malaise with an alarming large percentage of the population in dependency. And I believe that to be very true, because I see people taking, and we need to identify the difference between mental health and mental illness. And I believe we have a world today that has a mental health issue, and we have control over that. And the large part that is actually, we can see it reflected in our calendars. If I just look at a person's calendar, many people, sadly, are like a dead fish floating downstream. Anybody can float downstream, but it takes a strong salmon to fight against the current, to actually build the muscle and go up the stream. And today, we have people that are lacking a strong sense of purpose. Why? Because of the luxuries and the comfort that society has delivered to us. And so I say comfort is a great place to visit, but it's not where you want to live. And we talk about that in the book, about how do you just get a little bit outside of your comfort zone, a little bit outside of your comfort zone, a little bit outside of your comfort zone. And when you're willing to just get a little bit uncomfortable, you can actually embrace that. And it's in unlike a rubber band that snaps back at you. When we try to grow too much, too fast, we contract back. And so how do we have a fulfilling life? By being willing to get uncomfortable. Be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And it took a Navy SEAL for me to realize that was one of the things I recognized in the Marine Corps, is that they taught me how to become comfortable with discomfort.
Yeah, I love that concept of being comfortable with discomfort, or in today's world, you know, being comfortable with a level of uncertainty, which we're all facing with the COVID-19 situation. So I think one of the things that I really like about that concept, and James Clear talks a lot about this in Atomic Habits and a lot of the information he puts out, which is, you know, look at things from a point of view of not a big objective or a big change or a big outcome that you're looking for, but break it down into habits. And you know, by regularly doing the small things, then you achieve that big outcome. So it kind of like that, isn't it, in terms of stretching the boundaries of the comfort zone just a little bit, which might be just a little bit uncomfortable. And then you can, if you get used to that, you stretch it a little bit more, it's still only a little bit uncomfortable. And if you do that regularly as a habit, then your comfort zone's expanded all the way out. Now, I just drew a big circle with my arms for people listening in.
But we have examples of that throughout history. And I'm a big fan of understanding my history. Why? Because what's the saying? I'm going to probably botch it, but if we don't learn from our history, we're bound to repeat it or something. Mistakes,
yeah, something like that.
Something like that. I probably took three different quotes and mashed them all together there, but you got the point. Is we can look at Marcus Aurelius talked about this. We can look at an old African proverb that says, walk as far as you can see, and when you get there, you'll be able to see further. And I like to use the metaphor of it's like taking a pebble and you just kind of cast one pebble at a time. Well, if we're trying to move a boulder, and that's what often we do, Jürgen, is we'll take it like this boulder and we start pushing it uphill like Atlas, and we're like, oh my gosh, this is exhausting. Well, it's not very appealing. We can look at a pile and go, do you know how long it's going to take me to move that mountain? But if we just sit there in one pebble at a time, eventually we achieve our goal. And that's just doing one pebble at a time is what you're talking about, is that persistence and consistency is omnipotent. The Calvin Coolidge, one of the former US presidents, said, you know, knowledge, there's a bunch of knowledgeable derelicts in the world. And there's a lot of truth to that. We have universities all over the world and people graduating with all this knowledge, but it's not power until we can apply that knowledge. And so applying that knowledge is understanding. Is Sir Richard Branson said, is build one company successfully and then go build another. That's Elon Musk, right? Elon Musk started with, was he PayPal originally?
PayPal, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he was PayPal. Then he went and created, you know, who knows what else. But I mean, he's known for Tesla. Now he's known for SpaceX. And the man is amazing. It's not like he did it all at once. He just threw one pebble at a time. And look at the empires that he's built.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy. And I was just thinking there, you know, the trying to move the big boulder, it's sometimes it's like Atlas, but sometimes it's like Sisyphus, right? It just keeps rolling back down,
exactly,
down to the bottom.
Exactly. But I was, when I was in the service, I remember when I first went in, I was in boot camp and I had the flu and it was coming out both ends, very ugly. And my drill instructors had a very unique way of serving me. And they said, drop and start giving me push-ups. And somebody somehow was recording how long I was doing push-ups, because we weren't allowed to have watches and know what time it was. The whole point in the military is to keep you busy and not observe time. They're kind of like the casinos, right? As you go into a casino and who knows how many hours goes by. That way they're entertaining you. This way they're punishing you. But I was doing push-ups with the flu, very severe case of the flu. And all I was thinking was one more, one more. Well, when you go through Navy SEAL Bud School, one of the first things that they have you do is you have to do 1,000 push-ups. So who can do 1,000 push-ups? Very few people. And the trick is not to say, oh, I've got to do 1,000 push-ups. The trick is, let me just do 100. And when I get that 100 done, let me do 100 more. And when that becomes difficult, let me just do 50. When that becomes difficult, let me just do 10. When that becomes difficult, let me just do one more, one more. And eventually, you get to that goal. And that's what I didn't realize was just, I had no goal. It was do push-ups. Okay. I ended up doing push-ups for 45 minutes. Now, think about that. Most people, 3-5 minutes is a long time to be doing push-ups. the vast majority of people couldn't do push-ups for 5 minutes. I did it for 45 minutes while I was ill. And it was in that moment of pain, and yes, there was suffering in that, that I realized my brain and my body are two separate things. My brain, when it experiences pain, says stop immediately. But we are capable of 20 times more. And when we realize what we're capable of versus what our mind wants to try to give us the illusion of limitation, we realize if we just do one more, we can accomplish some great feats. But that means that we have to be willing to get uncomfortable. That's where the fuel is.
Yeah. It comes back, I was just thinking, it comes back a little bit to what you talked about earlier about being a master of your own identity and having the self-awareness of, okay, this is painful, this is uncomfortable, but it's not actually dangerous for me. So if I do one more push-up, for example, and then do one more push-up after that and just keep going, I'll eventually reach my target, as opposed to, let's say, you know, touching the hot plate and burning your hand, which
yeah,
you know, your head, obviously there's a feeling there and an immediate response. It's unconscious, but your brain is saying, you know, get the hell your hand off that hot plate.
Yeah, and you raise a really great point. And this was a conversation that when I worked and partnered with Tony Robbins, a lot of people know Tony Robbins as being, you know, the father of coaching. And arguably, he has been one of the greatest impacts in the self-help field. He's served countless lives. And I had the pleasure of him being one of my mentors. And Tony would say is, you know, understand the difference between fear and danger. And fear, if we look at that, there's an acronym is false emotion appearing real. And that's really what you're saying, Jürgen, is understand whether it's a false emotion appearing real or there's real danger. And he used to use the analogy of if you're petrified of snakes, well, if I hold up a rubber snake, that's just a false emotion appearing real. No matter what happens, that snake is not going to hurt you. But if you're standing behind a pane of glass with a king cobra and I slide that glass open, suddenly you're in real danger. And in his approach to that, this was one of the interesting points in student-teacher kind of experiences, because he'd say, you know, when that would happen is you needed to address what you're focusing on and the meaning you're giving it, which generates the emotions that you experience, the decisions you'll make, and the action that you'll take. So it was focus equals meaning equals emotion equals decision equals action. Okay, it's a five-step process. And I said, all due respect, I disagree. I said, that's great if you have fear, but if there's real danger, I don't care what you're focusing on, the meaning is irrelevant. You better take immediate action. If there's a king cobra in front of you, you better change your action quickly or you're in real danger. If you're standing on a highway, in that highway, there's a car coming at you during rush hour, you better move out of the way. And so what we realized in that experience is if it's fear, we need to look at what am I focusing on and what's the meaning that I'm giving to it. It's good, it's bad, you know, it's right, it's wrong, whatever that is, because that determines the emotions that we actually create. But if it's real danger, I need to take immediate action and then work that formula in reverse order. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And I like the snake analogy. I mean, we've certainly got lots of poisonous snakes here, and they're a serious danger if you come into close contact with them. But at the same time, I guess, yeah, that, you know, what you attribute the meaning to. So the rubber snake, you obviously attribute that to, you know, this looks like a real snake and I'm scared of the real snake, so I'm going to have that fear reaction here.
Yes, and I would say we can look at that analogy very clearly, but it becomes maybe critical for us to look at that in our everyday lives. So how do we actually look at our calendar? If we looked at a calendar 7 days And literally, I use Microsoft Outlook. I've used them all, and not because I retired from Microsoft, but because I think it's the Outlook is probably the best business productivity offices is got a lot. What they have at least 30 years that they've been working on that program. Yeah. I can look at 7 days, and I can look at those 7 days, and there may be some events that are on my calendar that create fear. But there are others that I need to look at, and I need to really be intelligent to go, which of these activities are fear-based that I need to work on the meaning, and I need to have a really empowering subject line, and which of these events have some real danger. And I may need to look at how am I approaching or executing that and whether I'm navigating that appropriately. But we don't tend to do that. Or we go into social media and, you know, somebody hurts our feelings because they said something on social media. And I learned is, tell you what, you want to know who you are? Go be an elected official. 10 years as an elected official allowed me to be able to define my self-worth by my standards, not society's. And so I was able to go in when I got a compliment, be able to go, thank you. When I got a judgment, okay, thank you. I was indifferent to either or. It, because I knew who I was. And it took being an elected official of, here's the reality, Jurgen, people don't come to you and tell you you're doing a great job. They only come to you when you suck, right, in that role. And so I had to actually look for who I was and define my self-worth by my own definition, not by society's. And I see that going on in social media. Oh, somebody said a mean thing. Are you going to use that as an excuse or as an explanation? And we can look at that as that's just fear. That's just fear of your ego, of your self-worth, of your self-esteem. Mm. And maybe that's something you need to work on, right? So when we look at that is, oh, somebody made a boo-boo, made me hurt. Well, we can focus on how you broke your arm or what do we want to do to go about fixing it, which means we need to look at the meaning and the emotions that it's creating. Well, that's not real danger. There are other things that we can look at is how are you showing up in your relationships? So if somebody comes to me and says my relationship's in the dumpster, I literally pull up your calendar. Or what? I said, pull up your calendar. And I'll look at the 7 days previous and 7 days to that, and I'll go, well, no wonder why. You're not blocking any time to have a relationship. Same with people in their faith. Because they're like, well, I want to know God more deeply. Great. Where do you have a relationship? Because it shows up in your calendar, whether it's absent or present. That's showing whether there's real danger. And I can tell you whether there's real danger by its presence or absence in your time.
Yeah, that's a really great point. You can see where are people spending their time and what are they focusing on? What are they treating as important versus what do they say is important? And yeah, they say, well, the outcome's not happening here, but I'm not actually
treating
as important. I'm not investing time. Yeah.
Finances as well, right? As I can see, where do you sit down and work on your financial abundance? Well, no wonder why you're in survival. You're not investing in that relationship. And so when we look at our identities, I ask, where is that proportionately showing up on your calendar? Are you investing in that relationship for yourself?
Great points. Well, this is fabulous, Chad. I could go on talking kind of the mindset around time and time management for ages. We've only just scratched the surface here, but we are running out of time.
Indeed.
As I speak. So it's a good point, I think, now to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience who are primarily leaders and in their field and innovators in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that will inspire the listener to go and do something awesome as a result today.
Well, let's see what we get. You never know.
Yeah.
I could be wise. I could be foolhardy today.
Yeah, we'll make it mean that it's wise.
All right.
What do you think the number one thing is anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Be resourceful. The thing that I learned is, and I learned this from another mentor. Here's the thing, Jurgen. I find that Napoleon Hill, if we look at any successful entrepreneur, successful titan, financial guru, whatever, I would bet you that every one of them have a book called Think and Grow Rich on their book side or somewhere that they've digested. Napoleon Hill is somebody who's long passed, but is remarkable in his wisdom. And the thing that Napoleon Hill taught us is resourcefulness is incredibly powerful. So if we look at football as an example, right, is you have people kicking around this ball, and you have this thing called periods in intermission or your halftime kind of. Well, in that time, what you're doing is getting resourceful, looking at, is our strategy working? Is our tactical execution working? So in as an entrepreneur, we have strategy and execution or tactical. And what we need to do is say, what is our playbook? If we have the same play again and again and again, it doesn't take a rocket scientist on the defensive line to go, gee, I wonder what they're going to do. But if we have a playbook and we communicate that, then we can run audibles. Then we can mix up our play. We can move our forward and defensive line mix up, and that's how we ultimately win. So I find in life is very similar to sports analogies, is that when we hit a roadblock, if we have a playbook, we can juke and jive if we're ultimately resourceful to make our goal.
Yeah, making options and exploring different options. Yeah, I love the idea. I love that word resourceful. And there's a saying in German. I don't know if I can do it justice in translating it, but it's when somebody's made that jive or adaption quickly, particularly if it's like if it's just a trivial little situation, but they quickly adapt and do something that might appear totally out of the ordinary at that point. There's a saying that, you know, anybody that isn't resourceful is totally hopeless or something to that. There's actually rhymes in German, so it doesn't work so well.
Got it. There's a second piece to that as well. And that's often that we are promoting to entrepreneurs of do. But I love the sports analogies because I can look at Formula One as an example, whether you subscribe to Formula One or not. But I can look at Formula One and say, you can have the most advanced, technically advanced race car in the world. You can have the most professional race car driver in the world, and you could have the world's best pit crew. But you will never win a Formula One race without taking a pit stop. Now, I use Formula One because you have to be strategic when you take that pit stop. They can measure the temperature, the track conditions, the tire conditions, the fuel consumption, the G-force, all of that to know precisely when to make that pit stop. But here's the dirty little secret that we don't talk about with entrepreneurs. Yeah, you got to be resourceful, and we hear people tell that all the time. But you also need to take strategic pit stops because if you don't, you stay out on the track too long, your tires get slick, you slam into the wall, you lose all that R&D, you lose the race. If you stay out there too long, you run out of fuel, your competition will pass you. Well, is there a single sport out there, Jürgen, that doesn't have a pause? We look at Mother Nature, the winner is our pause. So it's important that we also know when to strategically take a break, what I call a pit stop. And those need to be put in because, as Stephen Covey would say, the two lumberjacks, right? Short analogy is two lumberjacks, one's cutting wood all day, the other one takes breaks. End of the day, lumberjack B has more wood. Lumberjack A says, how in the heck do you have more wood? You sat there and took breaks all day. He goes, mate, I wasn't taking breaks. I was sharpening my saw.
Yeah.
So we need to recognize when do we take strategic breaks to sharpen our saw, to recharge our batteries so we come back as more productive, more effective.
Yeah, and that comes back also to the mental health, mental well-being challenges you talked about earlier, right?
Spot on, yep.
Okay, now what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
I do what's called mind blooming, or what is it, clarity blooming, blooming. I just call it blooming. And one of the things that I have learned, and this is the benefit of having a large family, is some of them come from the engineer logic-based world. Others come from the artistic flow-based. And so we can look at that as kind of masculine, feminine. And when we integrate those, what I've found is in order to be innovative, we need to get it out of our head. We need to write it down or be able to capture it in some form. But here's the thing that I've discovered for myself, Jürgen, is that if I actually try to go through that process and capture it, it hijacks the flow. That's where our innovation is. Our innovation, sadly, is not watching a 3-minute YouTube video. And we've got a society that thinks, oh, I can just watch this and no, all you're doing is replicating something that somebody else has probably done. Rarely do I see that really sparks true innovation. And it is, Bill Gates said, one of the greatest lessons that Warren Buffett taught him was actually downtime, was actually having nothing scheduled and having that place of quietness, because it's that place of just being that our creativity sparks. And so I find that if I want to capture that, I need somebody that will facilitate that for me so I don't try to play two roles. My job is just to simply explore, not have an agenda, just get it out. No judgment. And to suspend judgment and just throw out ideas tends to be a bit difficult for high performers, right? We have to evaluate things as they're coming out, but suspend it and just let it flow and have somebody that can capture that, that is skilled in the ability to capture that and build that map. And that's how I built my program. That's how I built my businesses. That's how I've built the book, is by being able to just let it flow, having somebody that is professional capture it and saying, is this what you were looking at? And I'll tell you, I'd be darned if every time I didn't go, holy crap, yeah, that's exactly, but I couldn't articulate that if, you know, my life depended on it. So we try to hijack it by doing ourselves. Don't. Invest, yeah. Bring somebody in to capture that is skilled so that you can actually be able to innovate and just let it flow. Honor the flow, but have a framework that is able to capture it.
Yeah, I like that. I really like that idea of having somebody else to kind of capture the flow and keep you from making judgment. Because I know when I do those sort of exercises on my own, I kind of come up with a half a dozen ideas perhaps. And if I get to half a dozen, it's good. But at that point, at the very latest, I'll say, well, how am I going to do that first one? You know, what? And then you start to focus on the implementation and the tactics, and often then the problems that and the hurdles that might be in the way, and that of course stifles creativity.
Yeah. So I actually have the fortunate privilege. I have a very talented resource that actually worked with this guy you may have heard of, Steven Spielberg. Has worked with Steven Spielberg's team, has worked with The Simpsons, one of The Simpsons writers for, and The Simpsons is the longest running animation show, I think, in history. They've had modest success over 30 years kind of thing, right? So if I've got that level of talent that is able to capture for them, imagine what they can do for me. It's probably just child's play when they work with me. But that it's important that you surround yourself with that level of capability so you can be at your best and allow them to let their expertise serve you.
All right. Is there a favorite resource that you use most often? I mean, you've talked a lot about the calendar and Microsoft Outlook.
I would say there are go-to resources that I have as a handful. And number one for me is the Bible. I have a degree in religion, so I've studied all religions. And the Bible is unique for me in that it doesn't matter what's going on for me, Jürgen. I can go into it and find answers. Now, the challenge with the Bible is trying to decipher the code sometimes. And it really requires you to have a relationship. But I can type in something in that, and it's always given me the advice that I've needed. Sometimes I've needed to consult, somebody that is in the world that can interpret or say, hey, you want to go over here instead of trying to search endlessly for it. And with that, I say, as Buddha did, is the finger pointing at the moon is not the moon. And people go, what? In other words, just because somebody's a bad Christian doesn't make Christianity bad, right? So I separate the human element from the book itself. But the Bible for me is a go-to resource that is giving me wisdom each and every time. Second is Napoleon Hill, and his works. Napoleon Hill and I think it's Conversation with the Devil, but Think and Grow Rich is the number one. I think it's Conversation with the Devil is powerful work. And Napoleon Hill is also in my shelf of go-to resources. And then recently is the most successful financial advisor in history. Warren Buffett isn't even close. It's Ray Dalio. And most people go, who? Ray Dalio is by far the most successful financial advisor in history. And he came out with a book called Principles. And Principles is actually two different books. One is how he led his company and built his company from values and character. The second is how he actually invested. And Ray, back in the 70s, was building really the first data mining systems before it was even thought of. And that's how he was able to achieve his numbers. And so Ray Dalio is another resource that Principles is rich in information in the ability to apply. And so the three things that each of those authors have in common is not that they're just rich in knowledge, but the ability for me to be able to apply that knowledge for myself. It's one thing to go, oh, that's great. I have no ability to apply it or how to begin becomes a problem.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So how do you go about extracting lessons from those books? Because I know, in the Bible, you know, there's lots of stories and metaphors for particular lessons, and it's probably very open to your own interpretation. Certainly Napoleon Hill's works are a lot closer to a business analogy, but there's still a lot of interpretation that can be done. And now Principles, I haven't read yet. I've got it on my list to read. So I imagine it might be the same. So how do you kind of take those lessons and say, well, this is how that applies in my current situation, or this is what I can do with that?
Yeah, I find that, for example, if I'm looking at how can I show up in my character, how can I actually be more kind, how can I be, you know, more patient, then I can look in the Bible and I can look at the fruits of the Spirit as an example. And the fruits of the Spirit gives me the characteristics that if all I did for the rest of my life is apply, I think there's nine, love is patient, it's kind, right? And goes through. If I just simply applied those qualities and I literally put them into my calendar. So what I do with that, Jürgen, is if I see a principle in there that I like, I literally look to how can I actually put that within my calendar. So if I'm going to go into this conversation in an interview and be a guest on a show, I get to choose which characteristics and qualities I want to bring in, right? I could bring in harsh language in vulgar language, or I can bring in a different vocabulary. And so what I try to do with that is if I'm going into a meeting, I'm going into a tense discussion or, you know, conflict with my wife. I mean, my wife and I have an extraordinary marriage. Doesn't mean that it's easy or that it's always roses, right? So I can look at those principles and say, how do I apply it in this specific event? And so what I see in that is the ability to say, whatever I choose to do, I get to decide who I want to be. And that's really what I see in Ray Dalio, in Napoleon Hill, in the Bible, is it's teaching us how to model who do we want to be regardless of what we're choosing to do. Then Ray, as an example, will say, hey, when you're doing finances, here's how to do it. So as an example in that is save first, spend what's less or left, right? And so in that principle, what I will do is simply go, oh, okay, I received some income. Put 20% away first, and I live, and then 10% goes to give, and then the 70% is what I'm left to live off of. Well, what do most people do? Most people spend, and if there's anything left, then they save. Well, there's never anything left. So what I will look to do is when I see a principle, when I see a proverb in an opportunity, is say, how do I apply it? So Eugene Peterson is an example. He created reinterpreted the Bible called The Message, and it's a very layman's rewrite of the Bible, so just a average Joe can go, oh, this is what it's trying to say. Because you read some of the verses in some of the interpretations of the Bible, and you're like, I have no idea what this is saying. Well, Eugene Peterson helped me be able to say, okay, if I don't want to swear anymore, how do I express without vulgar vocabulary? And literally putting that into my calendar. So as a reminder of how I want to show up and being deliberate with my language. So what I say is, find a way to actually insert it into your calendar. Because again, if you want to have a relationship, where are you carving the time to make that meaningful?
Hmm. Yeah, I love how you connect it up with the calendar and spending time on that. And also, it's making it part of who you are. So this is what I want to be. It's not just about doing something. It's, okay, this is what I'm going to be.
Yeah. So as an example, I had the opportunity, I chose to retire at 35, a very young age. And the reason that I did that is one, I was financially able to afford to do that. But more importantly is I chose that I wanted to be a present character and role model in my son's life. I didn't want him being raised by strangers of daycare or a public school system or private school system. I said, if I want to shape him, I have to spend the time. Now, often we will see the people in their calendars say things like drop off kids at football practice or at band recital, whatever. Instead, my calendar would say, I've safely traveled, spending quality one-on-one time, transporting my son to a day of success. Literally, that was the subject line. Now, I was doing that as I was beginning to retire from Microsoft. And this is back in the day where anybody could read your calendar. You could mark things as private. And I had people come up, they're like, Chad, if you lost your rocker, you can't put that in a corporate calendar. I'm like, okay, thanks, mate. No worries, right? And then literally every single one of them within 2 weeks, Jurgen, would come back and they're like, I don't remember exactly what you put, but I can't get it out of my head. What the heck are you doing? Because when we do it with purposeful language, it sticks. And instead of just saying, oh, I'm going to drive my son to school or take him, and he's tuned out in the back seat on some smart tablet or phone, and I'm returning phone calls or checking email or text or whatever, we have a perfect opportunity to connect. And we're missing that connection because we're disconnected, even though we're in the same location, in the same physical vehicle. So instead, what I learned is I can take that knowledge and apply it into the subject line so that I actually can serve that time in a purposeful way.
So, and again, it comes back to that outcome-focused expression or language.
Yeah, because let's face it, when we're in rush hour, if we're doing something, we could have construction, we could have congestion, we could have an accident, any of which, I mean, how many of us, Jurgen, you know, we're sitting in construction and that one person cuts in at the very last minute, right? And you know that person, we've all done it ourselves, right? And you're like, I'm sorry. Well, I could either give him the middle finger as telling him he's number one. Well, what's that example that I'm setting to my son? Not the one that I want him to embrace. Or if I say I have traveled safely, I've given myself ample time to expect the unexpected, to be able to not react, but simply choose to refrain of, who knows? Maybe that person is going to a hospital. Maybe they're trying to see a parent before they pass. I have no idea. But I can look at that as believing in the best rather than anticipating the worst. And that decides how I want to show up, which is what I'm modeling to other people. That's how I apply those principles in action. But that takes intent. That means every Sunday, I have to sit down and structure the next 168 hours deliberately.
Great. All right. Well, you might have answered this question already, but what's the best way to keep a project on track?
Consistency and persistence. I'll give you a quick example is when I did my first Ironman, and I had 33 major sponsors on the Ironman circuit. So I was somebody that did a lot of these. But my very first Ironman, I was on the last portion of the biking. I still had 30 miles, which is equivalent of what, probably about 55 kilometers of road to cover. And we had severe winds pick up. by the time I got off the bike, my legs were shot. I felt like I was wearing cement galoshes, and I still had a full marathon to run. And so what I realized in that is I could go run off into the woods. There was nobody around me, and I was actually still doing pretty well in the race. There's nobody around me, and I could just sit there for 4 hours, splash some water on my face, and then come back in and be like, okay. But I knew I had to live with that lie the rest of my life. I might be able to lie to other people and get away with it, but I couldn't live with that. And so what I realized is just be persistent and consistent. And so for me, it was run a half a mile. And when I got to a half a mile and I could do that consistently, run one more mile. And when I got to that, okay, run a 5K. And so that goes back to the beginning of our conversation, is break it down into small bite-sized pieces. That's how winning is done. When you break it down into increments, you eventually get to the finish line and get to have the victory. But don't forget that the journey is going to last a lot longer than the finish line. So how do we actually set our mind to enjoy the journey? Because that takes way more time. And so I've learned the language, my identity allow me to understand it's not my strength that holds me to my purpose. It's the strength of the purpose itself. So if you want persistence and consistency, you must be abundantly clear on the strength of the purpose itself. Otherwise, temptation will eventually win and knock you off course.
Yeah, that's, I love that, strong purpose. All right, we talked a little bit about self-awareness. So what do you think is the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Ooh, okay, now look at this. We're in like a fast round here, and now I'm struggling on that one. You know, it's interesting. I've read some studies, and the studies will show that something like 97% of the world is not self-aware, and 2% or 2.5% of people who say that they're self-aware are lying to themselves about lying to themselves. Right? They know that they're not self-aware, but they're saying that they're self-aware. And it literally is like 1% or 0.5% of the population is self-aware. So we have a large percentage of the population that really doesn't understand that concept if we look at science and research. But what I find is most of us know right from wrong. Most of us know in our instincts will tell us what to do. And so I would say in that is we're often listening. We've gotten to this habit, Jürgen, of listening to other people's advice and discounted our own. And so I would balance that and never forget to listen to your own voice. A lot of us have squashed that inside voice in hearing ourselves. And that's the one that we ultimately need to check in with, regardless of what advice that we get. So if we want to have self-awareness, trust that people have good intentions, but it's still our responsibility to verify that that advice is appropriate, is applicable, is timely, and is suitable to your needs. So we've got to learn to check in and listen to our own voice and not drown that out.
Yeah, and not discount it, because we tend to be our own worst critics, don't we? And then if somebody else comes with a contrary opinion, for example, I mean, I know I do this from time to time. Somebody comes with a contrary opinion and I think, well, you know, they must be right. So I change my mind. And then often what happens afterwards is I may come back and think, oh, damn, I was right. I should have trusted my own advice.
Yeah, and that's really one of the reasons why the professional life coaching industry is growing by leaps and bounds. Those that are really certified by the ICF, the International Coaching Federation, that's the regulatory body. What they realize is the blessing in coaching is that the principle is that we believe you already have the answers deep down inside. Our job is simply to ask the right questions that bring those answers to the surface so you can make a decision and take action. I am not there to give advice. So if you really look at a master coach, their job is not a mentor, is not an advisor, because I already believe inherently you know what you need to do. You just need help navigating to get to the decision.
Hmm. Yeah, I love that, asking questions. All right, well, this has been fabulous, Chad. Really enjoying this. Now, where can people reach out and find out more about you and perhaps even get in touch to say thanks for what you've shared today?
Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity. It's been a absolute joy and honor to be able to serve your audience and be able to share what my mentors have bestowed on me. And so if people want to know more, they can just go to chadecooper.com. E is in echo, chadecooper.com. In fact, right now, and we're about to make some changes, is you can go into there and you'll see that we have a program, 12-week program that you can get into, and we're about to mix that up. So just go to chadecooper.com, and if you want to know more, you can pick up the book, you can email me, and you can even become part of our family and learn how to create a legendary lifestyle yourself. So we've taken all of this and put it into a system, Jürgen, that allows you to rinse and repeat, to be able to actually throw that pebble consistently and persistently to build that mountain that you're looking to summit.
Great. We'll put that in the show notes, of course, so people can link and click through that. So do you have some parting advice you'd like to leave the listener today before we wrap up?
There's a lot that is constantly going on in the world, and some people choose to see the ugliness. I choose to see the beauty. And we often will forget that even in the midst of darkness, that there's beauty. And go easy on yourself. Learn to love yourself. You were born for a specific purpose. If you're not quite sure what that purpose is yet, take the time to discover it. If you don't know where, come out to chadecooper.com, and we actually have a purpose discovery exercise. What I would say is I think it was Lily Tomlin. I always wanted to be somebody. I guess I should have been more clear because everybody else is already taken. Is serve your purpose to this world, because it needs you to do that. Nobody else can do what you can do.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I love the everybody else is taken quote. Yeah, I didn't realize it was Lily Tomlin.
Yeah, she's a consummate comedian, isn't she?
Yeah. Okay, now, finally, Chad, who would you like me to chat with on a future Another Buzz podcast, and why?
Oh, wow. Okay. I'll tell you, a Nobel nominee is Dr. Bart Rademacher. He's a dear friend. He is always at my side in the foundation work that I do around the world. And somebody who's been nominated for Nobel Peace Prize is doing something right, I would say. What his brilliance and his gift is teaching about really proactive and rejuvenating care. So often in the United States, we have reactionary, and we don't actually talk about preventative. So he's got some really amazing insights in terms of like stem cell and what health is really about, that it kind of turns the health conversation upside down. And I see we build these empires of money only to spend it down to try to regain our health that we lost while we're building the empire. And so he's a great example of how we can actually be a good steward of our health, both physically, mentally, and spiritually, while we are out in the journey. So he's definitely a good recommendation. Who else? I mean, all what's coming to me are the big names. For me, it would be Elon Musk in the space exploration. Anybody that can talk to about SpaceX and where NASA's going, it will be in our lifetime that we will see that we will land both on the moon and build a station, but also use that as a launching pad. I see that we will actually reach Mars in human form in our lifetime. So to me, that's just a really interesting exploration and conversation of why and what all that means. So those would be two that I would recommend.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Do you know Elon personally?
There's the, the three degrees of Kevin Bacon. And I'm sure that I have some connection somewhere to be able to make an introduction. So yeah, I'm sure that together we could probably figure that out.
Okay, and I'll get an introduction to Dr. Bart Rademacher from you as well.
Yep.
And we'll have a chat to him. Hopefully we can hear you. Might be easier to get on than Elon.
Yeah, the last one I would recommend for you is Mark Divine. And I used a quote from him, 25-year Navy SEAL commander. He is one of the most evolved present men that I can think of as an example. And he's not the hard-charging warrior. That's not what he leads with. This is a guy that is a Zen master practitioner of the Far East arts and is just an amazing human being that I think would be certainly a blessing for your audience as well.
Great. Well, we'll get Mark on as well.
Perfect.
Three for the price of one.
There you go.
Excellent. Yeah. So thanks, Chad, for sharing your insights and your wisdom with us so generously today. I've really enjoyed this. It's been an episode full of gems, I think, full of great stories and metaphors. And I hope that I'm looking forward to sharing this with my audience. I'm sure the listener will get a lot out of it. So,
pleasure.
All the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that inspiring and informative conversation with Chad and took something away from his episode. He certainly has an infectious enthusiasm, and I love his way of choosing his response to the environment in a way that will serve him best. We always have a choice, right, of how to respond to virtually anything. I'm curious to hear what you took away from Chad's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/ChadEcooper. That is ChadEcooper. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/ChadEcooper. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Chad there, as well as links to his website, to his book, Time Isn't the Problem, It's You, his social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Chad suggested that we have a conversation with surgeon, humanitarian, and Nobel Peace Prize nominee, Dr. Bart Rademacher, Mark Divine of SEALFIT and the Unbeatable Mind Academy, as well as the one and only Elon Musk on future InnovaBuzz podcast episodes. So, Bart, Mark, and Elon, keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Chad Cooper. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got more fantastic guests lined up, including Megan Lynch of Six Point Creative and social media marketing specialist Neil Schaefer. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.